All right, John Kurtz, Mitch Fortner with you here on The Game. We have a Gene Taylor contract extension that came out yesterday. We did not have a chance to address it until here today. Gene Taylor will be making $925,000 per year starting next year. I think a lot of people see that and there's some shock value attached to it. What needs to happen, I think, is getting over some of the shock value of seeing $925,000 and realizing that relative to the rest of the Big 12, nothing crazy. I'm looking at some statistics from last year. Gene making $650K was last in the Big 12. Shane Lyons at West Virginia, $870K was next. Then you have Jamie Pollard at $903K. Jeremiah Donati at TCU, $938K. Mike Holder at Oklahoma State, $950K. And you have some ridiculous salaries in the Big 12. I mean, Chris Del Conte makes $2.3K. Joe Castiglione makes $1.7K. Mac Rhodes, $1.5K. Jeff Long was making $1.5K before he got the axe. I don't say all of this to be a total apologist for it. But what I am telling you is the part that I think has been under-recognized here from a lot of fans is just that this is market value and that the contract was going to expire at the end of next year. So it's about the time you would be giving somebody a contract extension. And if you think that your athletic director is worthy of keeping on, you probably need to give him an extension sometime in the next 6 months. And if you're going to give him an extension, you need to pay him like market value. He's been on the job now for what, about 4 years? And if you think in that 4 years, he's done a good enough job to vindicate staying on, you really have to pay him basically what he is worth. And that's what Gene Taylor and I'm sure his agent would be saying. Like, you need to bring this up basically to fair market value. So I don't think that asking price actually is very crazy. Now, what I understand is that the optics of it don't look great, especially when a lot of people are sitting around here being like, well, we don't feel like, you know, I mean, it sounds like you're not firing our basketball coach right now because there's a $2 million buyout there and that money is kind of an issue and that there's this attitude of looking down at Iowa State for paying the crazy buyout numbers they did to get their basketball coach in Texas, the same thing. And that was Gene Taylor did comment about that here on Wildcat Insider, about the amount of money that Texas paid to get rid of Steve Sarkisian, or to bring in Steve Sarkisian and get rid of Tom Herman. Understand that. I think that's all fair criticism. I think that's all totally fair criticism. I think in a vacuum, this makes perfect sense and is nothing crazy at all. I think with the context of it being during a pandemic, when, yes, again, you've had people furloughed in the athletic department and you've had people at the university furloughed and fired, although I hear that and I say, okay, the university, I mean, let's talk about the athletic department specifically, but there have been cuts there. So with the timing, with the context, it is not perfect. I would not sit here and profess to you that. But I think it's warranted enough. I think it's warranted enough. And if we talk about the performance here of Gene and like how that stacks up, that I think is a very interesting conversation. And I'm glad Derek brought up in the context that he did what happened with Bill Snyder. Because what happened with Bill Snyder was something that took very, very careful work. And Gene managed that and at least got the change that was so needed within the football department at that time, within the football program at that time. It was so needed that even Mitch Holtis was coming on the air here and saying, like, yeah, like there needs to be change. There needs to be change, as big a Bill Snyder advocate as there was. And so Gene facilitated that and made it happen. Because if you think that was just Bill Snyder waking up one day and saying, I retire, that's fine. You are sorely mistaken. I'm sorry to tell you. You are sorely mistaken. That took some very deft maneuvering. So that in and of itself, to me, Mitch, before we even get into basketball, before we get into a baseball hire that's been made, that in and of itself, to me, justifies at least him still continuing on, which therefore justifies him getting paid market value to be the coach.
And he's continuing
at AD, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's continuing on to with the new buildings that are going up in K-State Athletics. There's going to be the new volleyball arena that's going to be on the south side of the West Pay parking lot. I'm actually very pumped up about that one, even though Coach Fritz has been in favor many times of playing in a Hearn Fieldhouse because there's no air conditioning. They think maybe, all right, they have the advantage because it's going to be hotter than heck in there in the summers, or, you know, in August when they start their home matchups. And I totally get that. The Olympic training facility, they're going to get the new indoor complex for K-State football there. As yeah, people were upset with that because they're going to, some people are going to lose their parking spots right on the East Bay parking lot. But it's all about making the program, the K-State football program, K-State sports, with the renovation of Toyton Family Stadium, building Boozer Family Park that Gene Taylor has had a hand in with the fundraising and getting those things built. Absolutely does K-State look a lot better now with recruiting, when people coming in, seeing the university and how beautiful the athletic facilities are. That is a huge part of growing as an athletic department, and Gene Taylor has been a huge part of that. Going back to the timing thing, I will add to that, you mentioned the furloughs. That is where I think it does look a little bit ugly, because over 1,800 people at K-State was furloughed this last summer and most likely will not be brought back until after June 15th. And I thought to myself, you know, maybe this summer might have been a better time to do it. I don't know, for contractual situations or whatever, when the best time would get something like this done. But I thought the summer would be the best, because that's when employees of K-State who are furloughed would most likely start coming back. Plus, this is just a couple of weeks after K-State is out of the Big 12 tournament, another very disappointing year for K-State basketball, and fans are still begging to have Bruce Weber canned. And it hasn't happened, and people see that Gene Taylor has got this raise, which is it really much of a raise if you look at all the financial ins and outs of the details of the contract?
Well, it's definitely a big raise, but relatively speaking to the rest of the Big 12, he's not getting paid crazy money.
Right. I don't want my athletic director making less money than Jamie Pollard.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, mission accomplished, although I sat here and said, I mean, Jamie Pollard's doing a pretty good job. I don't, Mitch, to me, the conversation about people at the university, and it's not that I don't say this to be cold at all to any of them. Terrible situation if people at the university have been furloughed or fired. But I don't think the athletic department needs to be like beholden to what's going on there at a university level. They're two pretty separate entities, and athletics, whether academia wants to admit it all of the time or not, has a massive impact there on what's able to go on. And there's plenty of money generated for academia because of what happens with the athletic department. So I don't think they should be beholden to that. But fair point on the timing about basketball, too. It's not just that the basketball team didn't have a very good year, but now we're seeing transfers happen again, and one in particular in Dejuan Gordon that hurt. But you can't just base – that's another thing that doesn't look great, but you can't just base your contract decisions on that. You can't be working around what's happening. I mean, who knows? You may have had this set up to go and not anticipated a transfer, and it happens a day before, and whatever. You can't really worry about that too much. The basketball part of the conversation, though, is interesting. I would say that Gene at one point in time made what is justifiably a pretty good decision in keeping Bruce Weber around, because they went to an Elite Eight and won a Big 12 championship after he made that decision initially when everybody wanted him to come in and fire Bruce. Didn't do it, and look at what's happened. Now, another crowd would say, well, look at what's happened. The program has then tanked and has had two terrible years. Okay, fair. But I wonder how much of Gene Taylor's hands have been sort of tied with what's going on with the basketball situation because of a buyout and because of a pandemic. I think the grade is pretty incomplete as far as basketball goes. I think the grade is very incomplete as far as football goes. And by the way, that's an incomplete basketball grade when taking into account that, again, I think he made what anybody based on the metrics would deem a wise decision at one point in time on Bruce. Now there's questions about what is coming back around now, so I'll call it a wash. And then we go to football. His hire, Chris Klieman, had a great first year, and then last year it did go to hell at the end of the year. It did. But that was also a year where there are some built-in COVID excuses that you can at least raise, to the point where I would again say very incomplete. Very incomplete. And Gene has staked his reputation on that by signing Klieman to a long-term extension that has K-State really tethered to him for a while. But it's incomplete. You can't fire the guy for that right now. And that's what I think people get conflated here and confused. incomplete grade to me on football, incomplete grade to me on basketball, fairly incomplete grade on baseball, where he is made a hire that I feel very strongly about, and there are some very positive returns early, but it's still early, and we still don't 100% know what that's going to look like. So again, incomplete. Decent job with the facilities and fundraising, and then made one move that I think was very difficult and deserves being kept on, if nothing else, which was the Bill Snyder maneuver. All that to me adds up to you got to keep him on as the AD. And the problem, and where fans, I think, get stuck on this and can't think beyond where they need to, is in thinking, well, he hasn't done a great job with basketball because they suck, and he hasn't done a great job with football because they sucked this past year. So how can you possibly give the guy a raise under those circumstances? That's not how it's created. This is big-time athletics. There's a cost of doing business. And the cost of doing business is, if your athletic director is doing a job that is good enough to keep him employed, there's going to be a minimum threshold of money, basically, that you have to pay him. I mean, you could say, well, no, we don't have to, and then he can leave. Well, okay, fine. But then good luck like negotiating and trying to bring in your next athletic director if you're known as the school that's going to pay him $250,000 less than all of his peers. Like whoever, him or her, whoever the next AD would be, what are they going to think if you're the cheap school? You don't want to be branded the cheap school. It's cost of doing business here. If you're going to be competitive, whether it's Gene Taylor or beyond that. So I'm not saying you have to be crazy about it. I'm not saying you have to dance in the streets about this actually being out there and about Gene getting a raise and an extension. But I think you need to be realistic and understand that if you want your school to be participating in major D1 Big 12 athletics, this was just something that needed to happen. And it was going to happen at some point or another, and barring something crazy in the next like 6 months or so because it was a contract year. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at.
By the way, I was on Facebook because I was trying to find the original post of them announcing Gene Taylor, extension, more money, and go to the comments. But before I got there, because I wanted to see what the people were saying, how they felt, I hadn't looked at Facebook yet, but I found more Lon Kruger pictures because K-State posted a lot more to Facebook than they did Twitter. And my God, there's a lot of unibrow in there. Even as a coach, Lon Kruger just didn't care. Unibrow was his life until he probably got married, and the wife was like, no, the unibrow's going to – it's got to go.
Well, there's something to be said for that, man. Just let it ride. Do your thing. It worked out for him. I don't know why we have to keep roasting Lon Kruger. If you want to roast Lon Kruger with Mitch on the day of his retirement, at J.O. Kurtz, at Mitch DeFort, at the game KMAN, you can let it ride as well. Hey, speaking of Mitch – Mitch, I mean, look, I want you to still work here and all, but there is a job opening that I need to bring your attention to coming up next. It's Rusev.
Rusev? The wrestler?
Yeah, isn't this his music?
No.
Oh, damn. All right.
This song's called Simon Says. I forget who, it's a rapper. I forget who, man, I forget the name, but no, it's not the wrestler Rusev, who's, by the way, he's now AEW.
You tell me it's not Rusev Day?
Well, every day is Rusev Day, but he's not Rusev anymore.
Oh, he's not?
No.
Okay, well, that went nowhere. How about this, Mitch? I've got a job for you. How do you feel about Chicago?
Chicago's okay.
It's no New York.
No. They try to be, but nah.
Yeah, it's like wannabe New York.
I mean, the subway is above ground. That's weird.
Yeah, that... Chicago subway is so boring compared to the New York subway.
Oh, man. You find so many characters on the NYC subway.
We almost saw a man die.
Yeah.
On the NYC subway. Well, Mitch, if you would like to be the public address announcer for the Chicago Cubs.
Oh.
The Chicago Cubs are hiring a public address announcer to be the voice of the team at Wrigley Field. You must be available for all Chicago Cubs 81 regular season home games, makeup games, tiebreaker games, playoff games, and some non-game day events. How you feel about being the PA voice of the Chicago Cubs?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. That would be a tight job. That would be awesome.
Tight? Who says tight anymore? The kids do not
this
say...
This is what you're taking out of this?
Yes, the kids do not say tight anymore.
I'm not a kid.
That would be so tight.
I'm 30 years old. I can say what I want.
I love that. Mitch, boy, how tight would that be? be the PA voice of the Cubs. Mitch, we're trying. Yeah, but the point is, we're supposed to still be the young, cool guys here. We need to, as the man in charge of our brand management here, we need to project cool. We do not need to project that we're sitting around being like, yo, that'd be so tight. Okay, I'm sorry. Progress. Let's get, okay.
What?
I feel like you would have to change your style potentially a little bit to be the voice of Wrigley Field.
Okay.
I feel like the Cubs public address announcer at Wrigley Field can't be as, that doesn't seem to me to be a very like wrestling kind of PA guy.
Well, I tone it down for K-State baseball. Like, I'm not as intense as I am for basketball. It's a long day. You're saying a lot of names, and it's not as an exciting, like, I'll get a little carried away when, you know, Aoka Lee makes a bucket, right? Gets a sweet layup. I really lay into the name. But baseball, it's not that way. All right, I'm announcing the batter. I'm not announcing, you know, who scores a run. So it's toned down. I don't drag out the names either. I mean, there was a guy at Wichita State a couple of nights ago, man. He really liked to drag out the O's. I'm like, all right, let's calm it down a little bit.
Yeah, right? I heard you criticizing that guy on the air.
I mean, I liked it for a second, but then it was just,
now,
okay.
I think you were egged on by Chris Brown, but I heard you like openly criticizing your PA counterpart at Wichita State on the air.
Well, I will call out the PA announcers if I think they're good or bad.
All right.
They will get their 15 minutes of fame with Mitch Fortner on K-State Radio.
All right. Well, I just feel like at Wrigley, like, that takes a different sort of a brand. Like, Wrigley needs some quirkiness. Wrigley needs definitely leaning into being a homer, definitely leaning into being quirky. Because, like, think about when you think about guys with a microphone at Wrigley, you think about Harry Carey, who's very much a homer and very much quirky. And there's a lot of day games also. So it doesn't have, like, the big under-the-lights kind of feel a lot of times. So that's what I need you to project. I'm just asking if you could give me like a.
But he wasn't the PA announcer.
No. But I'm just saying that's what I feel like sells there. So if you could give me like an Anthony Rizzo or like a Javier Baez, you know, some kind of preview, a job interview here, if you will, a portfolio. If you were going to be the Chicago Cubs PA announcer, what exactly would that sound like?
Javier Baez. It doesn't need to be anything over the top. I mean, when I'm at Twitten Family, what do you want from me, John? What are these folks paying?
Do I
need a day job? Like, could this just be the gig?
You know, that's actually a great question.
I doubt they pay that much.
No, I bet you'd still have to have a day job because this is a job. You think about, like, the law of supply and demand, they would have no problem finding plenty of people that want to line up for this job. So they're not going to have to pay a lot. So you'll probably have to find a day job in Chicago, but, you know, you can do that. It's a big city.
The PA announcer for the Cubs, Andrew Bellison, I guess, who's leaving, I guess. He had 9,600 followers. But he also worked for this company called Watch Marquee.
Okay, but we need a little more pizzazz to your
Javier Baez.
Your heart's not in it. Your heart's not in it. You're not getting this job. Your heart's not in it.
Because I can't satisfy you. I'm not going to win.
Okay. Well, I could just see it on your face.
You're not going to be like, wow, Mitch, that was amazing. This is the job for you. I've never heard Javier Baez's name sounding better than what I just heard 5 seconds ago. I'm never gonna win with you.
All right,
you're gonna criticize me the whole way.
Well, I'm not. Listen, I don't do it just purely from a place of trying to criticize you. I do it from a place of I'm trying to help you along your path here. I'm trying to launch you to greatness. You need to start getting your name out there before you go to Jerry World in September. That's really what I'm doing. Like, Jerry World is going to be the big audition. Jerry Jones is going to be sitting there drinking Johnny Walker Blue.
For the record, I have not been granted the opportunity to be the PA announcer for that game.
Okay, but
yet,
you know, if you start putting your name out there for some of these major gigs, maybe that can come along a little bit better. Maybe Jerry Jones will have heard through the pipeline. So I'm just trying to help you along that path. I'm not doing this just
to... He comes busting through the door, stumbling on those White Claws. He's like, oh, my God.
You think Jerry Jones is drinking White Claws?
Yeah. I bet he is.
Oh, no, no, no. It's Johnny Walker Blue. That's like a well-documented thing. It's like a well-documented thing. You can answer the phone. That's fine. I'll carry it. I'll figure it out. No, I do not have Jerry Jones drinking White Claws under virtually any circumstance. I don't. Jerry Jones, I don't even know if Jerry Jones knows what a White Claw is. Is he married, or does he just walk around with like a different... I digress. Maybe his lady friend drinks White Claws. I don't think Jerry Jones does. Is there anything meaningful to update there from that phone call?
I'm sure the folks in his press box, or his suite, I should say, are drinking White Claws.
Yes, there is probably plenty of that going on. Am I going to like the number one song of the day today?
It's a great song. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorites from the person that is coming up here.
Didn't really answer the question.
No, you're going to love it. Going to love it, yes.
Okay.
It's a great song. I'm sure you've sang to it before on a long night at Mojo's.
All right. Well, now I'm interested. We'll find out what it is next. This is a jam. I can't hate. It's a good song. Good song. Can't hate on it. I just love the fact that he says.
Yeah.
I like that. Nice touch.
It's not just a song, man. It's a vibe.
It is a vibe.
Benny and the Jets is a true vibe.
It is.
1974, Benny and the Jets by Elton John. Just 1 week at number one.
Really?
Yeah. Should have been longer. Really should have, but. It's still number one in my heart. Sir Elton Hercules John, a singer, songwriter, pianist, composer.
A what?
From Pinner, England. And matter of fact, Elton John turns 74 today. Elton John has sold over 300 million records worldwide, making him one of the top 10 best-selling artists of all time. In 2013, Billboard ranked Elton the most successful male solo artist on the Billboard Hot 100 of all time, and third overall behind the Beatles and Madonna. Elton was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 92, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 94. He was knighted by Queen Elizabeth II for services to music and charitable services in 1998. So, of course, he's the music writer, but he has a lyricist in Bernie Taupin since 1967, and together they've produced 30 studio albums, 26 top 10 songs. This is their second of seven number ones. This is from, in my opinion, Elton's best album, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, seventh studio album. The album sold over 30 million worldwide, and the album ranked number 91 on Rolling Stones magazine's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. So the song tells us about Benny and the Jets, a fictional all-girl band, of whom the song's narrator is a big fan. And Taupin has said that the song's lyrics are a satire on the music industry in the 70s, of the glitz and glamour of the 70s. And also greed involved as well in the 70s music scene. Taupin also goes on to describe the flashy wardrobe of Benny, the leader of the band, who can be related to by Elton John, who has been obviously flamboyant throughout his years. Now, here is the big fact of this song I thought was very interesting. You hear a lot of crowd noise. You hear the crowd clapping at the beginning. What a slip there. Clapping at the beginning. Well, contrary to what it seems, this song is not a recording of a live performance. This is a studio version of the song with people applauding, dubbed in later on.
What?
Yeah. The clapping you hear at the beginning is from the Royal Festival Hall in a performance 1972. Whistles you could hear there just moments ago from a live concert in Vancouver, Canada.
How epic would it be if you were at that show and you made it into the version of the song that's now lasted this long?
I saw Elton a few years ago in Omaha, and he opened with this. I thought, oh, like, what an opener. Benny and the Jets right away. He just, he teases you with the first, and does it, multiple times. You know what's coming. You're waiting for the band to kick in.
What is Elton John's closing song?
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Do I even know what that is?
You should. It's a great song.
How does it go?
I mean, I might as well just play it for you. Because I'm not going to sing Elton John songs.
Well, you know, we've had a previous co-host who would, Mitch. I don't know why you won't. I feel like you should.
Because it's not respectful. I'm only going to ruin it. And I don't want to take the chance of ruining a good song.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
I'm going to get this fired up here for you, because Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, this would be a top five. And you know me, I'm a big Elton John fan. Elton John is a top five all time for me. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road would be a top five Elton John song for me. Not going to be as heavy as you might think of an Elton John song to be.
Not sure that I know this.
I've played it at Mojo's a few times when we've hung out pre-pandemic.
Like, what's Elton John's most popular song?
Well, Tiny Dancer would probably be it.
Which is okay. I feel like there's a lot better.
I mean, Crocodile Rock, Rocket Man.
Oh, Rocket Man's really good. Crocodile Rock's awesome. Yeah.
Here's what you might recognize.
Saturday Night's All Right. It's just, I need more energy.
See, yeah, I know. You're an energy guy.
Yeah. This is your favorite Elton John song?
No, it's not my favorite. My favorite Elton John song is I'm Still Standing. Now, that has plenty of energy in it.
Okay. Elton John's all right with me, man. Elton John is somebody that I've come to appreciate a lot more in my old age. Like my old age, I know a lot of you will laugh out there. But when I was, you know, high school, college, like, I mean, I knew who the guy was, but I would have just been like, I would have acted like I do 70% of the time on these number one songs where I'm just like, Elton John, old guy. Elton John is a boss.
You need to watch his biopic called Rocket Man. If you watch Rocket Man, you'll understand what Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is all about.
Who plays him in that?
Oh, I forget his name. But he really blew up after certainly playing Elton.
I realize this has been terrible radio this whole segment. It's been me being like,
Taron Egerton.
Hey, who's this or what's this? And then Mitch typing on a keyboard and then us like looking it up and being like, this segment has been very self-serving. It's been fun for us. It probably hasn't been very much fun for you. We didn't do a very good job of being entertaining.
Well, and Rocket Man, not only, I mean, obviously covers he and Bernie Taupin writing songs, starting Elton's career, coming to the United States, a part of, I guess, you know, post-Beatles, of course, but part of the British invasion, and really getting into drugs and alcohol. Mostly, I think it's mostly alcohol. But he got real deep into it. And where Goodbye Yellow Brick Road comes from is Bernie Taupin saying, all right, dude, I've had enough of your crap. I'm getting out of here. You're on your own. And that's what Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is all about. He's like, I'm hitting the road, hitting the bricks, heading back to the farm. And then I'm Still Standing comes in, which is my favorite Elton John song. is his sobriety. You know, coming back, he's not dead. He's back. He's clean. He's good to go. He's still standing.
He sure is. Well, that I kind of prefer the part. What's his best party song? I want like the I want Elton mid party state.
What's his I'm sexy and I know it.
Like what year? I'm looking at a bunch of his most popular songs right now. What year was he at his peak party mode?
Oh, I mean,
here's another one. Mitch, what was blank blank? And then Mitch.
Well, I'm trying to look up the year. So
so bad to our listening audience.
The song is called "The Blank Is Back." I think that's a good one for you. The Mitch is back, but just replace the M with a B.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a good party song. I have to throw that in there. Crocodile Rock is up there. It's got to be a big party song.
Yeah, no, Crocodile Rock's great. Yeah, Crocodile Rock is
Saturday great. Night's all right for fighting.
Okay, Saturday Night's all right. Yeah. All right, let me listen to some Elton John. We'll give you Ask Us Anything next. I promise it'll be better. So if you want to know how my brain works, after just saying, hey, I'm gonna look at all these Elton John's songs during the break, Mitch pops on after like 2 minutes and he's like, which Elton John song are you listening to? I'm surprised I'm not hearing a song. And I was like, oh, sorry, my friend texted me something and I was going to look up this old Ludacris song called Area Codes. I wish I could repeat why it was that I was looking that up because of the main line of the song. But I think you would probably advise against that, Mitch, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's what Luda has in those area codes.
Yeah, he's got certain things in different area codes. It rhymes, too. You know, it's pretty clever. It rhymes. All right, we'll get to some questions here. What kind of a question is that? Do you get scared when your imaginations come into reality? Like, is that a thing?
Man, that's deep.
That is very deep. I don't know. What am I supposed to...
what am I on? Like,
can you keep a secret?
Yes, I'm very good at keeping secrets, yes. I'm not a blabbermouth. I'm not a Michael Scott that just has to blurt things out when he hears something.
What would you say about me, Mitch? How would you answer that question for me? Can I keep a secret?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think so. I think you're good at keeping secrets.
I thought you would say the exact opposite because, honestly, I'd say the exact opposite.
Wow.
Listen, well, I can't. If it's important enough, I can. But when it's something like personal to me, I'm not very good at that part of it. I always feel like I have to tell like at least somebody. You know me, like I get all excited about things, and then like I want to tell somebody. If it were like a more serious something, I could keep a secret better. But if it's like something exciting or like not very good at that. I'm an emotions on my sleeve kind of a guy. I don't really hide from much of that at all, especially if you know me on a personal level. So I'm not the best in the world at it, I'll be honest.
After you've had a few adult beverages, are you more likely to let something slip?
I mean, God, yes.
See, when I've had a few, I tend to be pretty truthful. I'll just come out and tell the truth, you know? But if it's a deep secret, and it's especially if it's not mine, I still won't give it up.
Yeah, that is a different barrier that will like absolutely make me think. I don't mean to say that to be like, hey, any of my friends that are listening to this, you should be very, very concerned right now. But I think any of them would even tell you, like, yeah, man, like John's just gonna come out and say it. Like that's, you know, if you had the choice between me or Mitch to tell something that like, you know, your absolute life depended on, then yeah, you should tell Mitch before you tell me. You should. Name three things that never leave you no matter what.
Like my person? Like if I go outside or...
Yeah.
I mean, to quote a famous song by Adam Sandler, phone, wallet, keys.
My wallet would not be a part of that though because I can never find the damn thing.
I've been pretty bad at times leaving my keys and wallet in different places. I'm much better at keeping things organized now. As soon as I turn 30, I'm like, all right, assigned place for the Walden Keys, going to stay there every night, and I've done a pretty good job.
Name one physical attribute you love about yourself. Remember, these are questions to ask your crush.
Oh. I will have to say, for having short legs, I'm a pretty fast runner.
Oh, okay. So running speed. All right. Interesting.
That's why I was little sprawls in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Got some nice quads going these days. Some nice quads. They're like, you know, up here, the traps. Traps, those are pretty nice. Oh, my hair. No,
oh,
my
please.
Hair. My hair. Absolutely my hair. I'm getting a haircut tomorrow.